recorde Bento Mulhams. VA Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. My guest, Naledi Kabo, CEO of African Tourism Association, shed more light on the association's efforts in positioning the continent in the minds of travelers, as well as initiatives she has put in place to encourage Black travel to the region since she took over as the head of the American-based association. Good evening and welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast. And my guest is Naledi Kabo. She's the CEO of the African Tourism Association. Naledi, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Kojo. Thanks for having me. Thank you very much.
How are you doing this COVID era and with your webinars and not webinars, the town halls that I'm privileged to be part of?
We're actually quite grateful that you joined us as a partner in the CEO town halls. I think that they've been important in communicating with the trade, communicating with travelers directly from, you know, the key stakeholders across the continent. It's been so well received, and I'm looking forward to evolving those conversations into the private sector, into, you know, other government areas and things like that, because I think we're in a unique position during this time during COVID where people are a bit static. So they're more willing to sort of have more meaningful conversations, more in-depth conversations that we might not otherwise have had an opportunity to have. And I just think that that is some light in terms of like the darkness that COVID has brought about.
Okay, excellent. I think we'll go into details of that, but today we are talking ATA and everything about 7-ATA. Now, For some of us who've been around for some time now, we knew ATA and the congresses and all of that. And it used to be African Travel Association and Ed Bachman and his group were managing at the time. The last congress I think was in Kigali, Rwanda, under the CC Corporate Council, all of that. Give us a sense of where we are now with African travel to African tourism and the whole transition.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, ATA has a long past, having been established in 1975 and has gone through some changes. So when I came on board a few years back, first as a consultant, it was during the time that ATA as the Africa Travel Association was operating as a subsidiary of CCA after having operated independently for some decades. And, you know, through the transitional change, and I think after some analysis, it became apparent that what ATA was doing was a bit unique to what CCA was doing, and CCA being the Corporate Council on Africa, whose, you know, main priority is U.S.-Africa investment. And with ATA's constituency, including everyone from travel agents to the travel minister and everyone in between and related sectors, you know, cultural sectors like fashion and sports and music and the like, it made sense for ATA to again operate independently. And as part of looking at ATA and some operational changes that needed to be made, just really in terms of innovating and evolving, looking at rebranding the organization as well. And that's where the Tourism Association versus Travel came into play, because I thought that it was best, it better captured the scope of what we were trying to do. Yeah, I think a lot of times, especially for people who don't know what the organization is, when they heard travel, it was a much more narrow scope versus tourism. Yeah. I think speaks to what everything that we touch, you know, it speaks to where travel and tourism intersects with the other pillars. It speaks to culinary, it speaks to fashion, it speaks to music, it speaks to events in a way that travel did not. And so just even in thinking in the direction that the organization needed to go, I thought that tourism made the most sense moving forward.
Okay, interesting. No, of course, I agree with you, because travel somewhat is a subset of tourism, right, in general. So, you know, I agree. And where are we now in terms of ATA, and where do you want to drive it as a CEO now running the show?
Well, I think you know, it took a few years, quite frankly, to even get some things, some back office things in order, you know, relaunching the website, re-engaging members. Some of, you know, former members have come back, re-engaging some of the destinations as an independent entity as well, you know, re-establishing relationships with tourism boards, re-establishing relationships with other organizations. So I think we took a while to sort of really re-establish a foundation. And now that we have, it's how do we now move the organization forward and how do we better service not just our members, but our constituency at large. And so that's the entire tourism industry, but also travelers who already have an interest in traveling to Africa and then also identifying new travelers. And so I think that for us, it's really capitalizing on relationships that we have, strengthening our partnerships, even with our partnerships, for example, that we have together with you and with Voyages of Freak, looking at how we're working with tourism boards in a way that we can be a much more strategic based on the relationships that we have here, especially in the North American market, with the travel trade, with industry, with with press and media.
Yeah.
that are unique to us. We also uniquely have developed relationships, I think, with the diaspora segments within those markets as well, whether it's the trade and the press, in a way that I don't think that they were engaged with before. And so I think that we can bring some serious value in a more strategic manner to the tourism boards in a way that we haven't. We've also been able to look at our technology platforms. You know, we launched the exchange.africa, which that really was more of a call to COVID and how can we consolidate information that is there? How can we curate the information that's coming from all the various destinations? And we'll continue to use that platform moving forward as we move through COVID to provide sort of a centralized place for information, for trade, for travelers, for anyone that has that of interest. And that's a challenge because now we're trying to balance what we're doing day to day. We're trying to balance, you know, what we're doing or how we had to innovate or pivot through COVID. And then there's the extra layer, especially with us being here in North America, of the reckoning that has sort of come through the Black Lives Matter movement in terms of diversity and inclusion within the sector. So we're trying to serve that as well. And because of that, you know, that has intensified certain type of conversations. It's intensified the need to create even additional platforms that specifically speak to you know, Black travelers, Black travel professionals in a way that they haven't been serviced before because it was really somewhat ignored, whether we like to acknowledge that or not. And so we're trying to do all of those things so that travelers find us valuable, the trade finds us valuable, the tourism boards find us valuable. We want to position ourselves as a unique resource for all things that pertain to Africa travel and tourism. We want to be a conduit for other third-party players that want to interface with the tourism boards. For example, you know, the sports leagues that are looking to do more in the sports and event space in Africa. We want to connect and more organizations and associations who are trying to do business and have events in Africa. So really being proactive about identifying those groups here on the ground and approaching them and presenting them all that certain destinations have to offer, generating like really warm leads and then helping facilitate those discussions between the tourism boards and these organizations. And then, you know, on the leisure side for travelers, it's how do we disseminate information that is most valuable to them? What do they want to know? How do we make sure that we're helping identify new diverse, you know, potential audiences that may or may not have considered Africa before or that have considered Africa, but for whatever reasons, whether it's preconceived notions or perceptions or whatever negative narrative, haven't seriously thought about traveling to the continent. So how do we counteract that? So I think even with some of the webinars that we're having, we're trying to do that during COVID, but then also through the marketing that we're able to do. And I mean, and let me be honest and fully transparent. We're a nonprofit. There's only so much we can do. There's only so many resources we have, but we're hoping that we can facilitate more action through the agencies, through the tourism boards, through the private sector companies who are doing business on the continent.
Good. I mean, you've given extensive and, you know, and in-depth overview of what you guys are doing. But what has been the challenge from the diaspora? Because the diaspora is like your core, you know, the thrust of the association. and what has been the challenge from them in terms of traveling to Africa, and you know, yeah, because so often or not, there are, you know, there are some challenges that you know we must acknowledge that when we do it well, then it will actually.
Absolutely. Well, so interestingly enough, the diaspora has not been the core. But coming into AT&T, I saw the diaspora market as well as millennials as a missed opportunity to tap into these audiences that are traveling in increasing numbers. And so I thought they were an important audience for us to focus on. And I've had those conversations even throughout the trade, and I think that you're seeing a shift. And so for us as an organization, looking at this large diaspora market here, I think some of the challenges initially in terms of getting them to the continent is lack of information. The marketing messages don't speak to them. And then there's this perception that it's so difficult to get to the continent, whether it's because the flights are so long. I mean, there's nothing you can do about the length of flights, but you know, it's cost prohibitive. Those are some challenges that we've heard. It's cost prohibitive. The visa challenges, it's not as easy to move around the continent as one may perceive it is to move around Europe. So, you know, when people make those long haul trips to Europe, they know that they're going to hit, let's say, two or three countries at a time, or that's what they're looking to do over a 2 week period. And there's this perception that it's very hard to navigate in the same way on the continent. I'm not saying that it's easy, but I think we need to do a better job of communicating, you know, what countries are working together to sort of ease transit. You know, there's East African clusters, West African clusters, South African clusters, and I see that more and more even the countries themselves are working together, or at least talking about working together to push for more regional collaboration. And I think once those marketing messages start to come alive, it's going to be an easier sell. And I'm seeing the change. I'm seeing at the trade shows when people are coming and saying, oh, I want to go to Ghana, but I also would like to hit like Nigeria and Togo. And you know, so they're thinking along those lines. So I think the challenge for us is to make it easy for them to make those decisions. I will say this, surprisingly, I don't think COVID has deterred any interest from travel to the continent. If anything, I think that there's an increased interest in travel to the continent that I've seen over the last few months. People are pretty much just waiting for when are borders going to open for, you know, specifically, you know, U.S. travelers in a way, because obviously given our COVID situation, we have additional restrictions than some other travelers coming from other destinations. And so I think that if we can just clearly communicate what destinations have to offer, how to get to the destinations. And there are some deals that I think need to be more publicized, because people will see price as a barrier. Even people who are luxury travelers, it's just a different price point because it's a much longer haul than say going to London per se. And what are the opportunities? When's the best time to travel? When might you get some deals? I think that there are some very easy sort of tactics and strategies that we can employ to attract diaspora travelers to the continent. They already want to come, Kojo. They already want to connect to the continent. I think, and in large part, I have to say, Ghana did such a great job with the year of the return, but I think that had a ripple effect on the rest of the continent as well. Based on everyone that was talking about Ghana, there was this sense of, for the people who didn't go, that sense of FOMO. So they don't want to feel like that again. They want to go to Ghana. They want to touch the continent. They want to come home. And home really is the entire continent. And I think Ghana explicitly said come home. So I think if more destinations were more proactive about encouraging diasporans to visit their destinations, I think they would be well received.
Yeah, but again, we have to also put the measures in place, because like you said, you know, price being prohibitive for people to travel and all of that, we have to, and then also you can't come to Togo and then from America or you know American travel and you won't see Ghana, or you cannot see Ghana because you don't, you know, you're expected to have gotten your visa from New York, right. So that's complications.
That's problematic. And so is even, let's be honest, the intra-regional flights. You know, the difficulty to fly within the continent is a barrier as well. Because as I said, for people who do want to do those I want to hit two countries. If I'm coming all the way to Africa,
of course, you can travel 12, 15 hours and see one country and then you have the opportunity to see another. You know what it is about, traveling and travelers. You want to have a feel. You just have to make sure that, you just have to have the thing. So you can't come here 15 hours and then just go back.
Exactly. But if I'm trying to get my trip and say the anchor is country X, but I find out that this country that in theory should just be a few hours away, I can't fly straight there. I have to fly this way, or there's only one flight per week. That's a deterrent. So now my whole plan, that has to be addressed. And I know that I like to say that's above my pay grade, but I think those are some serious policy issues that need to be addressed. For example, I was coming to, earlier this year, before it was canceled because of COVID, I was coming to Senegal. And then I was trying to figure out, I needed to go to Morocco, and I also needed to go home to South Africa. It was too much. Like the entire trying to make
connections and that's something else.
I would have had to have gone to Europe to come back into Morocco. Yes. It's too much. And so those are the things though that become prohibitive, and especially the visa. People don't, the time it takes, there's a perception, and I hate to say a reality, there's some inefficiencies there. Like, will I get my visa back in time? It took so long. They still have my passport. Or will I get? They still have my passport. All of those things need to be addressed. And I think it's been proven that if you can get a visa on arrival, or do the paperwork online, whatever it takes, those countries benefit from making visa obtaining.
I mean, making your destination accessible and quite exactly. Competitive. Because, for example, if you go to Kenya. And if you want the visa online, you can do that. And I think you get in less than 24 hours or maximum 48 hours to get a visa online before traveling. Once you get that as well, you can also do the visa on arrival. Again, whether the visa fees in itself can be also a prohibitive measure, because tourism is very competitive. So if you're having a visitor arrival cost as much as $150, I mean that's it.
Right, exactly. You have to stay competitive, and I'm not. I don't know if there's a true appreciation for what a difference that would make. And in addition, I know I touched on it a little bit, but specifically with the diaspora. The marketing has to change. If you look at a lot of the destinations and just go to their Instagram pages, what do you see? What are the images you see? What are the hotels that are marketing? Who are in their messages? It's not welcoming. It doesn't seem inclusive. So that has to change. I was just on a panel a couple weeks ago, and someone, I won't call out the destination specifically, as an exercise before that conversation, had literally looked at certain destinations, and they said there wasn't one Black person on their page as far as they could see. That's problematic. So you don't appear to be welcoming, even though this is an African destination. And so I think that we have to do a much better job of marketing messages, images, making sure even the agencies that we employ, some destinations use North America-based agencies to do their marketing. We need to call them to action that they need to be much more diverse in the marketing messages that they're sending out. And it takes work and it takes resources, but there's no easy way around it. It has to be done.
Okay. Now, who qualified to join the African Tourism Association? Is it by association based, individuals? How does it work?
It's diverse. So it starts actually with young professionals. So if you're a student in tourism, or you've been out of school for 5 years, you can join as a young professional. There's an individual level. So at the individual level, we'll have like an individual tour operator or an individual travel agent. And then there's a supplier level. There is a level for corporate. There's three levels within corporate, three levels for within destinations and airlines as well. And so the differences in level really speak to the services that you're getting or what you're looking to get out of the organization. So for young professionals and individual agents, they're really looking for the networking. They're looking for trade show representation. They're looking for trade show access, because as an ATA member, we have relationships across the industry with trade shows. And so you can leverage us for trade show presence as part of your membership at no additional cost. And so I would say those are some of the things that are the most valued by the individual members. And then as you scale up to the corporate and destination memberships. That's really more about more strategic marketing support. It's communicating to our database. We have a large vetted database of the trade that we communicate with on a monthly and more frequent basis. And we have a great engagement rate of about 25 to 30%. And so it's helping with that. It for the corporate members, it's helping facilitate events or engagement with trade and press. We do that for the airlines, for the destination. It's coming up with, you know, marketing campaigns, you know, for those destinations that are interested in that. It's special projects. And so as you scale up across the board, you'll see a difference in terms of the membership. And so, and I'd like to say that I think as ATA, we not only serve our members in very specific ways, but we really service the larger travel and tourism industry at large, especially because of our general traveler engagement.
Okay. You know, we are used to the ATA congresses, and it was always exciting, you know, to be at ATA Congress. This year it was built to happen in Ghana, obviously because of COVID. It didn't take place. 2021, where is this still going to be in Ghana?
Yes. So we're still committed to having our conference in Ghana. That's important to us. And also later this year, we will still planning to work with the Ghana Tourism Agency to put together some multi-day programming, highlighting Ghana as a destination and its offerings. And then, you know, hopefully the plan is to resume our in-person congresses next year in Accra.
Okay. Well, excellent. What else, again, would you want us to know about ATA going forward? I mean, you can talk. You spoke earlier about the CEO town hall and then the exchange.
Well, I'll start with that because I think for me, the CEO town hall was a great start to creating relevant content during this time for the industry and for travelers alike. And I think through that partnership and what we've seen in terms of working together is, as much as everyone is somewhat getting Zoom fatigue, so to speak, I think that they're still looking for the most valuable content. And I think that that's probably, like, if I had to rate our content, our best received content, and looking at the other conversations that need to take place. So, you know, we're going to continue to do the CEO town halls with additional destinations, looking towards also, you know, what does the ministerial conversation look like in a way that, you know, they speak in a different way than a tourism board CEO would. So what does that look like? And then the private sector conversation from the stakeholders of key organizations doing business on the continent. And I think those conversations are important because they're really driving the changes in the industry. So we'll look to an extension of that. We'll be extending those when the environment is well and safe. Taking those in person, you know, at trade shows, having those conversations in person and what that looks like. And I think it's a good way to hold the tourism boards even accountable, because we can go back and say, okay, we've had these conversations. This is what the people are looking for. This is what they're asking. Can you address this directly? And then in addition to that, it's, you know, what we're doing online in terms of technology and platforms. We're working on a platform now that I think, we're literally working on the prototype and demo. You'll be the first to see it, Kojo, before we make it public, just in terms of, you know, the COVID response. As I said, with the exchange initially, it was just sort of, how do we get all of this information here? How do we collate resources in one place that people can easily find? And so this is taking it one step further in terms of easily accessing destination by destination information. What are the restrictions? You know, what's the process once I get there? What can I expect? And then that will evolve over time to, in a more direct, enhanced way, service to traveler, you know, from an attractions perspective, what to do, where to go, from an informational perspective. Because really, if you look at ATA's platforms right now, they're really more, they're for our members and they're for the trade. They're not really for the traveler. And so we're going to be rolling out more platforms and more tools for the traveler. Because right now, those tools don't exist for Africa. There's plenty of tools, and Africa may be a part of it, but they're not the core focus. So we really want to focus on, you know, how do we easily get information about Africa destinations to travelers? There's been a call for, you know, the call to highlight Black businesses even on the continent. So what does that platform look like so that they can easily engage? A lot of the Black travelers and Black tourism groups are specifically looking to do business with those companies. So highlighting those companies on the continent in a way that's very easily accessible, that you can reach that. And then also, you know, how do we support the related sector? So when you travel, it's the restaurants, it's the retail outlets and things like that, and making sure that we can highlight those. And so those are really traveler facing platforms that we're working on now. And I think that as ATA grows, we'll want to continue to innovate. I think what we've been trying to do is really identify where are the gaps and then how can we fill them. And so we found that there were significant gaps in terms of really speaking directly to the traveler from a purely Africa space. And so those are some of the gaps that we're looking to fill moving forward.
Okay. As we wrap up, what would be your advice to the National Tourism Board on what to do different to be able to attract some, you know, some very substantial market from North America?
Well, first, if you're not already, work with us, obviously. Two, I think take a really hard look in terms of what products are you offering and what you're promoting, because it starts with marketing and brand awareness. And I think that that's where we need to do a better job in terms of what each destination is offering. So it's a real evaluation and audit of your marketing materials. How are you, what's your outreach? Who are you talking to? How are you tapping into new audiences? Look at your platforms. How easy is it to get information? You'd be surprised how many times I'm looking for information, or I'm looking, some tourism boards don't have their own websites. They're just sort of secondary pages, maybe on an embassy page, or their websites are outdated, or, you know, they don't work at all. That's important. If you don't have a presence and you make it hard for a traveler to find you, you're already starting well behind the finish line. If you already have those tools, it's just looking at how effective and impactful those tools are. And I would also say, use the data. I didn't touch on that too much, but I think the collection of data and the use of data in a very strategic way needs to change moving forward. I have a digital marketing background, so I try to sort of build everything off of like analytics and numbers. It's like the numbers tell the story. Look at who's spending money. Are you speaking to them? If not, you need to start speaking to them. And the people that are spending money, where are they spending it? What are their interests? And then speak to that and inform your marketing and business decisions based on quantitative information.
Okay, so as we wrap up, tell us about yourself, your South African connection, everything. And yeah, As we wrap up.
So despite this very American accent, I am South African born, U.S. raised. We came to the States actually during the apartheid era when my father was in exile. He subsequently returned as soon as they allowed the return of exile individuals in the mid-90s. And my mother moved back after she retired a few years back. So my entire family, for the most part, has always been in South Africa. I grew up in a very Pan-African household. I went to school here in the States. I went to school in California at Stanford. And after Stanford, I entered into a management consulting career, which led to a digital marketing career. So I always like to say I'm a consultant by trade. I like to fix things. I'm like, oh, there's a problem, let me fix it. And from my digital marketing experience, that led me to working with some startups in the Africa space, which led me to CCA and ultimately ATA. And so for me, this has just been an exciting and a privilege to work in a space where I can say that I get to promote Africa for a living, in a way that I'm very passionate about. I don't think I've been as passionate about anything else throughout my my long work history as I have been now. Sometimes, I mean, it's extremely challenging. I'm not an industry veteran. I find that most people within the space have been in the industry for 10, 20 years. You know, I just came into a few years ago, but in this short time, I mean, it's hooked. I'm hooked on it. And I just see that there's so much opportunity and so much opportunity to really position Africa in a positive manner, in a way that hasn't been done. And obviously it's of a very personal nature to me. So I feel like I'm very personally invested, not just in what I'm doing day to day as a job, but in telling African stories.
Naledi Cabo, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Kojo. Thanks for having me. And thank you again for being such a good partner to us. I think that's been critical even for us in our evolution and as we continue to innovate. And I truly appreciate that.
It's a pleasure.